If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
In an interview this week, a former Trump Organization executive said that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is a better deal maker than President Trump. Said Trump, "Oh yeah? If she's so good, how come I got all these magic beans?"
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to MSNBC's Nicole Wallace, who also sticks around backstage to answer a few more questions exclusively for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
President Trump's approval ratings are at record lows, and there are already several prominent Democrats with serious track records lining up to run against him. And then there's Howard Schultz, the billionaire former CEO of Starbucks. Schultz has been attacking Democrats and says he wants to run a centrist independent campaign for president. And so far, the rollout has been a disaster.
Former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz got an earful from a protester at a New York City book signing Monday night after Schultz said he is seriously considering a possible independent run for the White House, a move that many Democrats fear could split the anti-Trump vote and help reelect the president.
I am seriously considering running for president as a centrist independent. And I wanted to clarify the word independent, which I view merely as a designation on the ballot.
Don't help elect Trump, you egotistical billionaire.
Damn. It is not good when people are yelling at you at your first campaign event. He's like a stand-up comedian who gets heckled before he's even told a joke. How's everybody doing tonight? You suck! By the way, that event was at the Barnes & Noble in Union Square, which has a Starbucks in it. He got heckled in one of his own stores. It's like if the Colonel showed up at a KFC and got his head dunked in the fryer. There is virtually no appetite for a billionaire businessman to run for president right now. I guess somebody really put a stink on that genre. Running as a billionaire now is like saying, we should do a music festival with Ja Rule on an island. And instead of making a case for why he should be president, Schultz has been going after Democrats like Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, and even Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
In order to run as a Democrat today, you have to fall in line with free Medicare for everybody, free college for everybody.
I don't think their views represent the majority of Americans. I don't think we want a 70% income tax in America.
When I see Elizabeth Warren come out with, you know, a ridiculous plan of taxing wealthy people a surtax of 2% because it makes a good headline or sends out a tweet when she knows for in a fact that's not something that's ever going to be passed. This is what's wrong.
You just played Senator Harris as saying she wants to abolish the insurance industry. That's not correct. That's not American. What's next? What industry are we going to abolish next? The coffee industry?
No, dude. There's a difference for one thing. You can make coffee at home. But every time I try to homebrew some insulin, my lab rat has a seizure. Seriously, you think people are gonna vote for you? You over them because you're the CEO of a coffee company? Personally, I'm more of a Dunkin' Donuts guy, but that doesn't mean I'm gonna vote for the CEO, who I assume is just a drunk guy in a Bruins jersey chucking snowballs off a highway overpass. Check out our crust sandwiches! If Schultz really doesn't like the current Democratic field, he could just run against them in a Democratic primary. But he wants to bypass the process because he thinks he's entitled to it. That's right. The guy who ran Starbucks doesn't want to wait in line. But Schultz doesn't even seem to know the basic facts about how elections work. In an interview on 60 Minutes, for example, he pledged to get on the ballot in all 50 states. But then he said something that made no sense.
If I decide to run for president, not only will I be on the ballot of every state, all 50 states, but we'll be on the ballot in every county and every district.
What? If you're on the ballot in a state, you're on the ballot in every county and district in that state. Every county and every district isn't a presidential plan. It's a Starbucks expansion plan. And we don't want a president who can't separate his last job from his current job. This guy was a builder, and now all he does is talk about building a wall. Instead of health care, what are you going to give us? Cake pops? So Schultz's initial rollout has not gone well, which meant Trump couldn't help but comment on it, because when Trump sees someone getting attention for doing something dumb, he gets jealous and does something dumber. And earlier this week, he attacked Schultz in a tweet.
Howard Schultz doesn't have the guts to run for president. Watched him on 60 Minutes last night, and I agree with him that he's not the smartest person. Besides, America already has that. I only hope that Starbucks is still paying me their rent in Trump Tower.
Okay, first of all, why would anyone in New York go to the Starbucks in Trump Tower? There's two on every block. That's like going to a Mets game just for the Shake Shack. The food might be good, but you still gotta watch the Mets. Second, Trump just admitted he still makes money from his businesses. You're supposed to lie and say your business is separate. If Vladimir Putin announced that he was running for president, Trump would tweet, "I hope he's still paying me bribes." When Trump sees a grift, he can't help but get in on it because he's a lifelong grifter. And the thing about grifters is they attract other grifters. That's why Trump's campaign and White House are filled with scam artists. His personal lawyer set up a secret slush fund to take bribes. His first national security advisor was lobbying for a foreign government on the side. And his acting attorney general had a scam company that helped sell hot tubs. I'm pretty sure that's how Trump found him. "Hello, I'd like to order a hot tub. Also, by any chance, are you a lawyer?" So you got all these grifters surrounding the president. Even when they leave, the grift doesn't end. That's when they try to sell us books full of inside dirt about the Trump White House. The latest attempt comes from a guy named Cliff Sims, who worked in the White House as Trump's director of message strategy. His new book about the White House is called Team of Vipers. In the book, Sims reveals details of Trump's interactions with other Republicans like former House Speaker Paul Ryan. Sims relays a story about what happened the rare time Ryan said he disagreed with Trump. Trump called up Ryan and yelled at him.
The book also goes on to describe the president reacting to Ryan distancing himself from Trump in October 2016 in the aftermath of the Access Hollywood tape. Quote, "I remember being in Wisconsin and your own people were booing you," Trump told Ryan. "You were out there dying like a dog, Paul, like a dog."
What does Trump have against dogs? He's always attacking people by saying they were fired like a dog or choked like a dog or they were begging for money like a dog, or they got kicked out of the ABC News debate like a dog? Dogs don't do any of those things. And if a dog got up on a stage at a debate with you, not only would it not get booed, it would probably get elected. But here's the thing. Sims still says he was proud to work for Trump. In fact, he went so far as to say that Trump doesn't have a racist bone in his body. If that's the case, it's because he doesn't have any bones in his body at all. I mean, look at him. I didn't think it was possible for someone to look like a sad version of the Kool-Aid Man. Oh, no. Sorry about your wall. So in an interview with The New Yorker this week, staff writer Isaac Chotiner asked Sims a very simple question about Trump's infamously racist crusade to prove that Barack Obama was not born in America. But Sims didn't want to answer because he knew it would contradict his claim that Trump isn't a racist. So the resulting conversation went in circles forever. Here are some highlights. What's your understanding of birtherism? What do you mean? Like, what do you mean, what's my understanding of it? What the president was doing there? I have no idea. Oh, I don't really know what that was all about. You are selling yourself as a smart DC insider, and yet you are telling me here, on the record, that you have no idea what that was about. Is that really what you were doing? I know what it was about. So what do you think it was about? I don't know. Really? You don't know? I guess I'm confused at what you were asking. You keep saying you know what birtherism is about, but you are not telling me what you think it is about. So what do you think it is about? So I think that's, like, a great example of a time where he does not step up to the plate and take on these race issues in an appropriate way, a helpful way for the country. No doubt that that was terrible. I don't know what else you want me to say about it. We have been talking for 5 minutes about this, and it took you that long to say that. I mean, geez, I've heard people more comfortable getting a full cavity search at the airport. What do you mean you're not following the line of questioning? The question was, what is birtherism? Were your high school essays this bad? Trump is the most famous grifter in politics, but like all grifters, he attracts other grifters. They're just as complicit in his agenda as anyone else, even though he's an
egotistical billionaire.
This has been A Closer Look. Our next guest served as White House Communications Director for President George W. Bush and was senior advisor on the McCain presidential campaign. She is chief political analyst for NBC News and host Deadline White House weekdays at 4 p.m. on MSNBC. Please welcome back to the show Nicole Wallace, everyone. It's lovely to have you back out here. You and Rosie are friends. You know each other.
We're friends. We were on the ill-fated, I don't know, season whatever of The View, and Donald Trump is our through line. So he came out, and, you know, she was supposed to fight with me, and she said, he's a racist. And I was like, mm-hmm. and then he's terrible. I was like, mm-hmm. And that was it. We both got fired. Right?
Yes, pretty much.
I want to ask about, there's so many things I want to ask you about, but the shutdown, it seems like everyone is in agreement, pretty much. Maybe some far-right holdouts that Trump won this game, but everybody seems to agree that Nancy Pelosi played this perfectly. What do you think is the fallout from this for the president?
Well, the fallout is those far-right holdouts are calling us, you know, from block numbers saying, yeah, he lost. I mean, the holdout is even the wackiest part of his base thinks he's a giant loser for this whole caper. He didn't know seriously. And it's not because they disagree about the wall. They just think that strategically he failed. They think that he was owned publicly and privately by Nancy Pelosi. And it's sort of an insider point, but it was his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who ran point on this. And they think he's not up for the task of running legislative affairs for the White House.
It seemed at every level to know exactly what to do. Was the taking away of the State of the Union, was taking away something that ceremonial from the president, a stroke of genius from Nancy?
It's a mistake to project onto him more sophistication than exists. And for him, taking away airtime, taking away the thing that we all recognize from the movies and whatnot about being president, standing there with the people behind you clapping or booing or whatever they're doing, that to him, those are some of the most sort of powerful and precious things to him about being president. So to take that away really did sort of cut all of his leverage.
And, of course, it's happening on the same day that he capitulates there. Roger Stone is indicted. You traveled in Republican circles when he was in those circles as well, Roger Stone. What was your take on Roger Stone?
I mean, he was at a firm that was so dirty. You just knew that if no one else would hire a bad dictator, like, oh, well, that firm will do it. It was Stone Manafort, who's awaiting sentencing for his felonies. And, you know, the idea that we're all supposed to believe, Chris Christie was on my show today, and I said, you know, everyone around the president has either been convicted or is awaiting trial for the crime of lying about Russia. Is that a coincidence? Well, it might be a coincidence. I mean, everyone that the president surrounded himself with is either a convicted felon or has been charged with a felony.
You talked to Chris Christie today, and it was a very long, talked to him for about 40 minutes, and it was a fascinating interview.
I don't think it was that long.
No, I wanted to hear you interview him, but, you know, he wrote this book, and it seems to be a thing that a lot of people leave the Trump administration, and then they take this one shot at sort of reframing their experience because they are now trying to, you know, re-enter polite society. Do you think Chris Christie will be effective with this book, with his take on what has happened inside that White House?
I think Chris Christie is like Donald Trump in that people know what they think about him. And if you're from New Jersey, you know, he left with some of the lowest approval ratings in that state's history. But I think if you're in the Republican Party and you see a lot of people were into Trump, Chris Christie has some of that bluntness without, you know, all of the criminality that seems to follow.
Well, I do think something that's similar with the two of them is the people were charmed by their authenticity, you know, and again, you know, it was no small thing that Chris Christie was a governor, you know, Republican governor in New Jersey.
Yeah, and look, Chris Christie has genuine friendships on the other side of the aisle, and I don't want to name any of them. They may be witness protection at this point, but, but I mean, he did.
I got the kind of friends that don't like the world knowing.
No, but he has obvious political talents. The challenge I think he'll have with the book is he savages Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law. He spares nothing. And Kushner deserves it. Savages Bannon. Bannon deserves it. I said this to him on TV, so I don't feel like I'm talking about him behind his back on TV. But he doesn't lay a glove, really, on the president. And the president puts those incompetent and seemingly corrupt people in very powerful places.
Yeah, I guess that's the disconnect, is how can you say it's not the president's fault? He's surrounded by, you know, sort of liars and idiots. Because that seems
and
to
felons.
Be, like, a pretty important part of the job, is who you bring in to the White House with you.
The president has surrounded... There weren't any qualifications to work on the Trump campaign. You didn't really have to know how to do anything political.
Yeah.
But you had to know Russians, like Russians, and then lie about what you did with them.
Yeah. That's a weird thing to have. You had that in special skills on the resume.
Maybe it was like, in Russian.
You prepared for State of the Unions when you were working with the Bush presidency.
Yeah.
How do you think they're preparing for Tuesday, and how do you feel about... It seems like people are looking back at the Bush State of the Unions in a different way now.
Look, we didn't usually have high expectations. You know, I love Bush. He wasn't known for these, like, soaring rhetorical skills.
Right.
But his speeches were thoughtful, and he would consult with his own party, and he'd try to have policies, and there were bipartisan things that we knew both parties would support. This White House is a little more fly by the seat of their pants, and they have a guy named Stephen Miller, who you talked about. You cover Stephen Miller.
Yeah.
Who isn't really known for doing anything that unites anybody. The unique thing about this speech is that they are on their heels, they are on their knees. They're in such a position of weakness. He's going to have to do something to sort of shake up his own political standing.
Isn't it terrifying, and I know this happens all the time, isn't there nothing more, or I would say, I feel like the most terrifying thing in the world is like Donald Trump needing to do something to shake it up.
Yeah, please.
Like just somebody going in like, we got to change the game. You're like, no, I don't.
No, please. No.
Yeah. Just like maybe like go back and read the rules of the game.
Right.
Just to like see like what's normal.
Right.
Have Pence do it.
Pence do it. I can't imagine. I feel like he's going to do the whole State of the Union like looking back at Pelosi.
Right.
The fact that she's over his shoulder.
Yeah.
I mean, she could.
That relationship is so interesting. I mean, she became Speaker while my old boss was still president. And so I've been to this movie. I know how it ends. Well for her, not well for the Republican president. And the fact that no one studied sort of her, not just her legislative acumen, but she can do what really no one else in either party can do. She can hold her party together. And I don't know if it's all of her experience. I don't know if they fear / respect her. It's usually a combination of that in politics, at least. But she can hold her party together the way no other Democrat or Republican can.
Well, I think in that way that there are I think there are Republicans who thank God right now that there's Mitch McConnell, because Mitch McConnell gets things done. I mean, if you're a Republican right now...
keeps them from getting done.
Yes.
Can we boo? Can we boo?
You can do whatever
you want.
All right,
he said Mitch McConnell.
But I mean, like, it seems like Nancy Pelosi is his... You know, that, like, you ultimately need somebody who understands how it works. And it seems to me that Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell understand how things work.
Definitely.
Whereas when you have somebody like Donald Trump does not fundamentally understand how it works. And anything he's getting accomplished is through the help of somebody like Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, everything. And everything that he fails to do is born from that incompetence. And if it isn't covered on Fox and Friends, he hasn't learned it yet 2 years in. I mean, that is his whole sort of going to school. And to their credit, this week they finally said, whoa, you are not. I think they said, you are not a king. I mean, he's even getting pushback from his trusted sources of information.
There's a lot of talk about how the media is going to cover the 2020 election and how, you know, the danger of talking about it like horse race politics and whatnot. But isn't the person that's most likely to be distracted by the 2020 election the president himself?
Of course. And it won't even be the substantive attacks on his... sort of the cruelty and the vapidness of his policy and his tweets, it'll be the person with the biggest crowds. So Kamala should be the person that Democrats are most excited about. She has the thing that scares him the most, the biggest crowd.
And he's probably just sitting there trying to come up with a nickname for her now.
Definitely. And if you go back to the first day of his presidency where he sent his press secretary out to lie, he went to the CIA and sort of debased the CIA by bragging about his crowd size. She now had the thing that we all know he values the most, the biggest crowd.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly going to be interesting to watch. We'll be happy to watch you talk about it. Thank you so much for being here. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you
as well.
My pleasure.
Nicole Wallace, everybody. Deadline White House airs weekdays at 4 p.m. on MSNBC.
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Nicole Wallace of MSNBC.
Yes.
Nicole, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You were talking a little bit about Roger Stone.
And me.
And Nicole
Wallace's son's here. Liam.
Liam, do you like your mom's show?
Yeah.
You were talking with Seth about Roger Stone and kind of him being around. Oh, here's Rosie.
Are you still working?
Hi, Mama.
Hey, Rosie.
Podcast. I love
this
you.
This is the podcast.
Here comes him. Dinner.
Okay, yeah.
Hello, people.
Rosie, do you want to say hi to the podcast quickly?
Yes, please. Hello, podcast people. How are you? I don't have headphones, but I'm hoping that you're having a good time.
Roger Stone. Yes,
yeah.
Roger Stone. You covered Roger Stone today, and you talked about how he was viewed in Republican politics.
Right.
What was it like during the campaign to cover the types of people Trump hired? Because these were not the typical consultants.
Yeah, look, there was the wrong label put on them. They were sort of described as a Star Wars bar, which in politics is a common put down, but it misses the point. They weren't just misfits. They were corrupt. You know, Manafort and Stone were known for doing the kinds of consulting work that other firms wouldn't do.
Every time you're here, we also talk about what's kind of going on inside the White House. And a lot of the campaign people moved into the White House. What's your current sense of what the White House is like post-shutdown?
Well, we talked about it out there, and he said, you know, everyone other than the far right thinks that the shutdown was a debacle. The far right is among the most upset about the way the shutdown ended. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone thinks it was a massive failure.
Right.
And the people who won't say that are lying. So the problem for Trump is that it isn't just sort of the 60% of people that already disapprove of him that thought the shutdown was a disaster. It's big chunks of his base that thought it was a calamity of sort of previously unmatched proportions.
Does Trump himself understand that? Does he know how big of a mess up it was?
It's unclear to me who would say that to him.
Yeah.
You know, so would it be, his son-in-law who didn't get a clearance because the CIA didn't give it to him and someone overrode the CIA? Would it be his daughter? Would it be, his... Liam wants to talk. Go ahead, honey.
Hi, people.
There we go. That was Liam at 7. It's just, I don't know if he knows. I mean, Fox News has, in some pockets, covered it straight. But so if he's seen those pockets, he might have seen it. But it's unclear to me if he knows.
Where do you think it goes from here? Is the political damage too great for him that he will just kind of forget the wall and try to move it on? Or does he go, does he go and try to get this rushed through sort of an emergency declaration?
Yeah, look, the reason there's no wall is because there isn't support for a wall.
Yeah.
So Congress will do dumb things if the public supports them.
Right.
But there isn't enough public support for this dumb thing.
Right.
So that's why there will not be wall funding through Congress. So if he wants a wall, he's going to have to declare an emergency.
And, you know, Chris Hayes was here and he was talking to Seth about how the wall is such kind of an amorphous idea. Like, there's no kind of legislative text for it. It's just this idea of a wall. But practically building it is a huge, complex, challenging thing that we're just not discussing.
Well, because a wall isn't really what anybody that studies immigration thinks would solve the problem of illegal immigration. We're right back at American President, where they've got an immigration solution that has no chance of solving illegal immigration.
It must be so wild to cover this thing specifically. It just seems like none of it is based in reality.
The last two presidents, President Obama and President Bush, tried to marshal the power of the presidency to pass comprehensive immigration reform. George W. Bush had the support of the late John McCain and the late Ted Kennedy. President Obama had some bipartisan support. At the end of the day, neither one of them could get enough members of their own party and the other to do anything real. And so the idea that Trump's going to figure it out, you know, I guess anything is possible, but it seems highly unlikely.
Last question I want to ask you. Howard Schultz, Starbucks CEO, has been on every show today, it seems. He's saying he's likely going to run as an independent for president because he doesn't see a place for himself in the Republican Party or the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
What's your kind of early sense of his rollout, which has been bumpy to say the least?
Yeah, look, my good friend Steve Schmidt is one of the most talented political operatives in the country. Mm-hmm. And so I think if a way can be found for him, it'll be found by Steve Schmidt. My personal opinion is that Donald Trump just changed the Republican Party. He wasn't a Republican, and he jumped in and changed the Republican Party and won. And I can't stand him. I loathe his politics. I loathe him as a politician, but he changed the Republican Party and won that primary. If anyone from the business community, the entertainment community, man, woman, Republican, Democrat, moderate, wants to get in, they should get in and win a primary in one of the two parties.
Right. Yeah. Change the party towards you.
Change the party. Yeah. I mean, I just think that I agree with the assessment that he's made that the country has an appetite for something different.
Uh-huh. Definitely.
I think that appetite is so voracious that you could jump into either party and be successful.
Interesting. Well, that's one of the many stories you'll be covering over the next few weeks.
We cover what you guys cover. We upset people. You guys make us laugh.
It's a good balance. I laughed during a Christie interview. It was great. I loved your interview with Christie.
Well, I mean, I he's my friend, but I mean, the
you
truth
could tell,
is,
you could tell there was
yeah,
a warmth there, but you
my
were
friend,
tough.
And but you know, it's like people know how they feel about Christie,
yeah.
And if you're going to be so brutal and tell the truth about Jared, you got to tell some more truths about Trump because I know he knows them.
Well, thank you so much for being
thank
here.
Thank you for having
such
me.
A pleasure.
So fun. So fun. That's hey. That's not me chewing,
what
too.
About me?
Oh, thank you.
Well, I'm eating popcorn.
Liam, you're the real star. Thank you.
Bye, whatever.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.